When Matt Damon and Tom Hanks lovingly look at each other, I thought, I guess I can get behind this.
Okay. The makeout was a bit much.
Well, that's why they exposed themselves to that sniper. Set a perimeter.
Live from the Mundangerous Wedding Chapel in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 267 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about introducing romance elements into your game. But first, the party discovers a secret identity in the Gates of Morning campaign. And later, the Heartbreaker is a warrior who knows love is a battlefield in the Character Creation Forge.
I'm James Intercasso, and I love tabletop role-playing games. I've got a new podcast called Tabletop Babble that talks RPG advice, interviews, reviews, and news with some of the top names in the industry. The conversation is casual, just like it would be if we were hanging out at a convention or local friendly game store. Get a new episode each week at don'tsplitthepodcastnetwork.com or wherever podcasts are available for free.
So Shane, I don't know if you know this, but we have a podcast together that we work on. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've been working on that interminable project for about 5 years. How about you?
Very, very, very long time. Feels longer. Feels longer than quarantine, weirdly.
Yeah.
But of course, we also have our own projects on the side. However, I think this might be the first time that we have both worked on the same project that is not this podcast.
That actually, I think, is true. Yeah. Weird. Well, Ishan, what is the project?
It is the Skyjacks setting zine, volume one.
Now available on itch.io from the One Shot Podcast Network. This is the setting supplement for the World of Sphere, which is the setting of the campaign podcast. So James D'Amato did most of the writing for it. You did the editing. I got it all organized. Jason Robinson did the layout for it. It's gorgeous, and it is available on Itch.
There's a lot of cool lore. All of it makes sense, which is not something you can say about every lore book you might get from an RPG. Isn't there more stuff about Skyjack, Shane?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, no, there is.
Okay.
I'm also helping out with the Kickstarter for the Skyjack soundtrack. With all the original music that scores the podcast, written and composed and performed by Arnie Parrott, putting that together into a digital album that is available on Kickstarter. There's also an absolutely insane tier with if you want it on vinyl. That's the only physical way to get it. It's extremely expensive, but also vinyl is extremely difficult to make, so... but otherwise, yeah, it's I think $15 or $25 are the two different price points for it. It's up to like 20 tracks, I think, on the deluxe version. All kind of like jaunty sea shanty type tunes.
You know, the discerning audiophile knows that vinyl is the way to go. So if you're a true fan, I think you'd spring for the vinyl. Did you know? I know a lot of you are pretty young. Vinyl has two sides.
That's true. I know this. Also, did you know that it holds between 15 and 20 minutes of music per side? We were very concerned we wouldn't be able to fit all the songs on there.
That's not true. You can just get a bigger record.
That's, yeah, okay. There's a limit to how big the arm on the record player goes, Ethan.
You can get an extender. It's not a problem.
Okay, sure. Anyway,
that's why it's called an LP.
Yeah, it's not that.
I didn't realize long arm play.
Right, a 7-inch is like literally a single. I didn't know that. I did not understand that when I went in. So it had to be a 12-inch. It's like $150. It's extremely expensive because it's prohibitively expensive to make these things.
But you know, they'll last longer than your CDs.
That's true. If you check out the Kickstarter, there's a video on there that has samples of four of the songs on the album. I made the music video, so you can see my video editing skills in a non-unboxing format.
Yeah, you can thank our YouTube channel for those skills.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so where are we in the Gates of Morning campaign?
The Gates of Morning campaign is our 5th edition D&D game set in Eberron, a sequel of sorts to the original Morning Glory campaign. And in southern Karnath, on the edge of the Mornland, the party is chasing a killer.
Well, we're kind of more locked in Mortal Kombat with the Polda, who is like the researcher spellcaster in charge of this facility. But, you know.
She's definitely killed some people. Maybe not specifically the person you were looking for, although maybe. Yeah, she's using water from the Mornland in this underground facility to reanimate new kinds of terrible undead monsters. And she has activated an arcane apparatus, which caused dark water in nearby sarcophagi to begin to bubble as stitch zombies start to emerge.
So, most recently, Zan threw a daylight grenade and eliminated the darkness that the stitch zombies summoned, preventing them from teleporting or hiding, and instead forcing them to rely upon their impaling claws that tear us to shreds.
Bramble, the shifter bard, is able to bewitch one of the zombies, though, by drawing a glowing rune in the air, so it stares blankly up at the ceiling while the rest of the party focuses on the other zombie.
And Warden, still a bear, tosses Polda into the pool below the waterfall in an attempt to drown her. But the water then explodes with radiant light. Everyone in the area is thrown backwards as she breaks her bonds and rises slowly from the water to float in midair.
Her eyes are aflame, and a ring of psychic energy tears her hood apart as it blossoms from her temples. And the party can now see that she's not a halfling at all, but a human child. It is Pol, one of the refugees they saved on the Day of Mourning, and now a girl of about 9 years old.
Now, Switch, the paladin, remembers how she dragged the little girl to safety after her mother was killed on the battlefield, and she tries to reason with this enemy, imploring her to recall that once upon a time they were friends.
But Polda sneers at these words. "I have always hated children," comes the cold reply, and she raises her hands as the room erupts into flames.
It's a very Dark Phoenix moment here. And we'll find out what happens next week.
She kills Cyclops, obviously.
That's right.
And no one is sad about that.
It's because he wears Oakleys.
I'm sad about different Cyclopses, just only not that one.
Only cops and Cyclops wear Oakleys.
Cyclops is a cop. Come on. Come on. You know, Cyclops, also a snitch.
That I believe that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, Cyclops and Jean Grey, Shane, today we're talking about romance.
We are.
Not that terrible a romance.
No, a good one, hopefully. Probably a funnier one, most likely.
All right, so this is a request from the Discord. We're talking about romance in your games. What does that mean, Shane? It obviously, of course, means interpersonal drama above the table.
Unfortunately. No, this is introducing that interpersonal drama into the game, right? Like the romantic angle, either intra-party between PCs or between a PC and an NPC. I think, importantly, this may include sex, either on-screen or implied, but definitely doesn't necessarily mean that, right? Like, this is about the emotion of romance, not the act.
And this is distinct from other emotional bonds. I think there are a lot of games that leave out romance completely, but still dive pretty deeply into the reasons that characters might care about each other, or, you know, feel like, you know, they're on the same page or have a lot in common with each other, or, you know, would die for each other, right? And that doesn't necessarily need to require someone to be in love with someone else. But if you do want to include that in your game, there's some things to think about, because it comes with more challenges than most other emotional bonds.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of understands, like, family, right? Like, or like the attachment between siblings, right? But and people probably also understand romance. It's just that I think there's a lot more consternation associated with it, right? Like, it tends to be more challenging for people to talk about and to be open and honest with, just in broader life. And then that makes it therefore more challenging at the table.
Yeah, no one ever gets squicked out when someone's like, "I'm going to defend my family."
Right, exactly.
Why? Gross. Please stop talking about that.
Right. So it's sensitive, right? Like it's tread lightly subject matter. You know, it might be inappropriate for your audience if you have kids at the table or adults that you don't necessarily know well. kids probably leave out, but teenagers, right? Like where people are, like what phase of their life they're in, like it may or may not be a great idea to even bring it up. Right. If you're gaming with your parents, like
definitely another bring it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, this is might, right? Like you can have a game that for kids that includes romance elements. It's just something that you need to be careful with. It also might be inappropriate for the particular environment that you're playing this game in or even this session in, right? Are you in a crowded convention hall? It may not be wrong to talk about romance, but you might have players who are just a lot more uncomfortable bringing that up in front of like all of these strangers. So maybe this session, you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, like likewise a game store, right? Something that's a more intimate setting, but also mm-hmm. surrounded by strangers, right? Like I think role-playing like the romantic angle can often be more personal to people and therefore maybe something they don't want to put on public display.
Right. I mean, live on a stream, right? Usually you have people come together and say, what are the ground rules? What are the topics that we're potentially going to cover while we are live streaming a game and other people are watching us? Mm-hmm. If you have not gotten full consent from everyone to venture into romantic territory, that's extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that consent is just the most important single baseline, and it's probably something that needs to be renewed more often than not. Mm-hmm. You know, like in the same way that we consent to going and killing monsters, and we probably only need to do that at the beginning of the game when you signed up for Dungeons and Dragons, that's good enough. I think probably when the romance theme becomes, you know, primary to the narrative, like that's a good time to go ahead and reestablish consent as well.
Probably your character hasn't evolved or changed enough from the beginning of the game to not want to go kill monsters anymore. Oh, yeah, although I guess that's possible. But you can definitely change where you're no longer the lone wolf and you're more open to like these kinds of interpersonal connections. But you also might be, you know, a character who's now gone through trauma or, you know, has lived with the rest of the people in the group long enough to know that they definitely don't want to explore those themes.
Right.
So just make sure you're bringing it up early and often.
Well, I think that's another good comment on one of the challenges, right? Is like, just because like you are willing to explore these themes doesn't mean that the game group is necessarily the people you want to do that with, right? Like this group of strangers at a convention or even like your game group that you see every week. Maybe that's not who you want to explore these themes with. Maybe you would prefer to do it with strangers on the internet, you know, where it's lower cost.
I mean, we have this simmering tension that I just don't want to explode.
Right. So being aware of that interpersonal awkwardness and that sort of renewed consent, I think is important too, because you change as players over time, right? So maybe your character hasn't had anything that would otherwise like kind of make them disinterested through trauma or whatever, but you have, right? If you're going through a breakup, you probably don't want to be role-playing like the, you know, triumphant romance of the prince and princess or whatever, right? The storybook fairy tale of Prince Charming and Princess Wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, you've signed on to a game of Lancer. I didn't know we were playing, you know, mech pilots in love, and now here we are, and I was just in this for like a fourth edition style skirmish game.
It's like you didn't read Lancer at all. Check the source material, Ishan.
But you know, of course, if you are playing a game of Monster Hearts, then yeah, it makes sense that this is what I've signed on for, and I'm more open to it. But even in those instances, you're going to need to keep checking in with people just to make sure everyone's feeling okay.
Yeah, and this isn't like a thing that's like judgmental or prudish, right? Like not being up for the theme is like, that's fine, right? Like I accidentally watched Cruel Intentions with my parents. It was bad. I should have said no.
Wait, they were going to watch Cruel Intentions and they offered to watch it with you and you were like, yeah, why not?
It was on HBO.
Oh, okay.
And so like I had it on and like at, you know, the beginning of it, right? And they walked in and were like, oh, this looks interesting. It's like Ryan Phillippe and Reese Witherspoon. And then I was like, oh, this is going terribly. I hadn't seen it before. I didn't really know much about it other than like I knew about the kiss, right? Because it won the MTV Movie Award. It was a big, big fail.
And you weren't a big fan of the 17th century French novel Dangerous Liaisons?
No, I had not yet read Dangerous Liaisons. For the record, still have not yet read Dangerous Liaisons.
I recommend doing it with your parents.
I will. Yeah, that's the only thing that could be. I did finally see the John Malkovich version, by the way. I still find it odd when he's the object of romantic pursuit.
Except from himself.
Right. Okay, so another reason that you might find romance angles in your games to be a challenge, it's often divergent from the core themes of a game, right? Like, is this game about killing monsters in dungeons, or is it about the people who go killing monsters in dungeons, or is it about the love between people who went and killed monsters in dungeons?
Yeah, I think you get this a lot with, like, war movies, where, you know, you're signing on to see a movie about, like, dying face down in the mud, and then suddenly if there's a romance subplot thrown in, it's jarring. And it can actually come across as cheesy or even, like, irresponsible when you're talking about these other very intense themes.
I see you saw Pearl Harbor.
I did. No, I did okay. not. I did not. Well. Save myself from that one. But when Matt Damon and Tom Hanks lovingly look at each other, I thought, I guess I can get behind this.
Okay. The makeout was a bit much.
Well, that's why they exposed themselves to that sniper. Set a perimeter.
It's all right. Barry Boswick had their back. Another thing that I think historically we've run into with romance angles in RPGs is just that they've been gamified, and extremely poorly so.
Yeah, I don't think this means that you can't or shouldn't gamify romance. I mean, I think it works perfectly fine for, you know, a GM who is running NPCs and, you know, a player wants to have a romantic subplot with one of these NPCs. As a GM, to just sort of, like, silently to yourself be like, all right, you did a nice thing for them, I'll put a tick mark in there. Oh, it looks like you've done, like, six of them at, you know, eight of them and no, like, huge screw up. Maybe they will requite a romantic gesture, right? Like, that's just sort of an easy way of bookkeeping it on the back end, although I wouldn't make it public. A lot of video games do this.
Yeah.
But in RPGs, you end up with things like the Book of Vile Darkness, the Book of Erotic Fantasy. Ugh.
Yeah. Or worse, RPGs with acronymic titles.
That shall remain unnamed.
Right. Where, like, all of these things are playing up the, like, rote sexuality of romance. And in a way that, like, speaks more to the author and the person interested in it than it does necessarily about what anybody playing with it or what the characters themselves would be interested in.
Yeah, it plays into some of the worst stereotypes about gamers themselves. And in instances where there is a bit of truth in that stereotype, it sort of gives people permission to act out on their worst impulses in a game.
Which is not necessarily what everybody has signed up for. And even in good games, right? Like, this isn't just the worst game, like, just taking the worst products on the shelf. Like, Apocalypse World famously has sex moves. In the first edition, they were very commodifying. Like, they just kind of equated sex and romance. And they were just a thing that you did to regain resources, which is, I don't know, pretty lousy for a lot of people who don't have, like, great, I don't know, relationships, like, or don't have, like, great strength in that aspect of their life.
I mean, it's a little red pilly, you know.
It is, yeah.
It's a little Cruel Intentions.
There's some incel energy there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things like this can falsely equate sex and romance into essentially the same game resource. And of course, that resource is to be used and exploited to get something out of it for yourself.
And then it also becomes a thing that, like, the protagonists do to the world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they inflict upon the world their will rather than, like, having a healthy and consenting kind of relationship to it. So it's, like, it's kind of rapey in its way. Like, I know that isn't the intent. And to say that about Apocalypse World is probably a stretch, but just that's, like, what you want to watch out for is, like, you know, is this a thing that's requited and, like, you know, consented, or is this a thing that's, like, manipulative and, like, destructive?
Yeah, I think in the same way that we want gamers and games to facilitate interactions between actual people that you can carry with you into the real world and have be healthy interactions. You want romance and sex in a game to reflect that as well. You don't sort of want to like train people to think about it in a way that's going to be unhealthy or even dangerous in the real world. And I also think, probably people will sort of put a dividing line between romance with an NPC and romance with another PC, because obviously, like you said, Shane, if you are sort of inflicting something onto the world, if you're trying to set up a romance with another PC, then you are inflicting it on literally another person at your table.
Right.
But even if it's an NPC in the game, the GM is the person running that NPC, and so you are, in essence, inflicting it on the GM. So right. That is still something you need to look out for.
Right, and that goes back to like the age-old trope of like, you know, sexually harassing the barmaid, right? Mm-hmm. Like the person who's on the receiving that, the actual person is the GM, right? Like it's inappropriate anyway. Like it's bad behavior for people, but even if it's, I don't know, role play character period appropriate, like you have to recognize the person who's on the receiving end of that is your GM. They should have some buy-in into that behavior as well. And then to like kind of summarize like a big theme of using romance as a subject matter is just you can run into a lot of challenges because you have insufficient player safety at your table, or you have insufficient safety tools at your table, right? So players might not feel safe with that theme, with that group of people. And then even if they do feel safe with that theme and that group of people, you might have not have the tools in place that allow them to continue renewing that safety.
Yeah, you can have a lovely group that gets together and feels mature enough to open up the Book of Vile Darkness or the Book of Erotic Fantasy, and you're still going to have a bad game because those are bad rules.
Or because you don't have like lines and veils, right? Or you don't have like an X card, or players don't feel empowered to use them.
Right, say, and none of those books include any of that content. Right,
yeah, for real. So like, I think that's just a baseline prerequisite. Like if you don't have that in place, like one, I think that should be there for every table, right? We've talked about that in the social contract, twice now. I think we did two episodes on that.
It's true. We did.
But also just like, especially if you're going into a theme like this where, you know, it can be touchy.
Okay. So then let's talk about setting up those safeguards. First off, of course, is have a session zero. You should be doing this no matter what, romance or not. Session zero always makes for better games.
Right, but session zero is where you need to make sure that you have the buy-in for that angle if it's going to be a big theme. And you can kind of do that sort of renewed session zero if it comes up later, right? Mm-hmm. So, hey, there's this NPC, like, I think like there could be a cool plot angle here if, you know, you saved them from this predicament and they did a nice thing for you. Like, is there something more there? Would you like to play that out? Cool. Let's like do a quick, like, you know, pre-session zero, like a 20-minute conversation at the table with everybody to say, hey, is this a theme we want to explore or not?
Yeah. I mean, that can even happen in the game pitch. You know, here's the kind of game I'm thinking about running. Are you all interested in that? There's going to be gushy stuff.
Right. Or, you know, I mean, it could come up later, right? It could be an emergent theme too that like, okay, we should probably talk about this and make sure we want to continue on it, or just ignore it and move a different direction.
Right. Is this a kissing game?
Right.
Then you want to understand the depth of the buy-in within the game that everyone has agreed to play. And one way to do this is to look to TV and film ratings, essentially, right? Like, it's not a binary opt-in of yes, we will have romance in the game, or no, we will not have romance in the game. There are different levels. Is this PG where like there will be a chaste kiss and then we'll fade to black and we won't talk about it, but everyone knows that like, you know, you got lucky and that's it?
Yeah, or like your triumphant moment is holding hands, right? Because that's all you need. Like that physical touch is, that's it.
I mean, for me, I'm just gamifying the holding hands, right? Aha, my fourth hand hold. I will spend this on a special move.
If you want like a more of a PG-13 level, you know, you might have more on-screen conversation, but probably less shown, right? Like you might kind of perhaps have more sexual content referred to, but probably not explicitly like role-played.
Right. Right, between the players, but it might be clear to everyone that like clothes are coming off. Oh, and you know, it's PG-13, so you get one fuck.
That's right. And then, of course, R-rated or beyond, you know, you're kind of loosening things up quite a bit. That's where you're going to want kind of continual check-in to make sure that everybody's okay as you go. But that's sort of more opening it up to wherever imaginations take people. And an unlimited number of curse words, obviously.
But probably only one full frontal scene.
That's and three thrusts.
You can also define it by genre. You know, it's sort of a shorthand that most people will understand. Hey, we're going to play this like a CW teen drama, right? So there probably will be romance between the characters or NPCs and like maybe some making out and maybe like broken hearts. But, you know, it's not going to get hot and heavy, and we're not going to like venture into too dark a territory.
Yeah, this is like you're Saved by the Bell, right? Like,
Zach
it's all
Morris
harmless.
Sucked.
What?
Zach Morris sucked as a person.
Okay, sure. Okay. But like you get the like the Slater Jesse angle and the, you know, the Screech and Lisa angle, mm-hmm. like, you know, and it, like you play that out, you know that they have those feelings, but they don't necessarily like they don't act anything out. You know, they hold hands in the hallway and then they separate when the camera shows up.
And once per season you get a kiss.
That's true. Probably with somebody they're not dating. That's how we keep it dramatic. Zach, you monster. You can also go to like the primetime sitcom level, right? Where like you have romance. It's pretty open. Like it might be kind of more of that will they, won't they. Dating is a thing, but you don't necessarily focus on the sex because the camera can't linger on it, right? So that's fine. You can have those kind of long-term relationships even, but they get played more for either, you know, emotional payoff, or they get paid for, frankly, laughter.
Yeah, I mean, Seinfeld is 95% about dating and sex, but it never happens on camera.
Right, exactly.
It could be something like an HBO prestige series where, I mean, almost anything goes. You're basically looking at an R rating, but all of it is to fuel the drama.
Unless it's Game of Thrones.
Oh, well, that's just because, you know, when the GM gets tired and just wants to end the game.
Right. And then I think you can go like the last stage is like full on Alfonso Cuarón. Right, where you're just like, this is a game about sex for sex havers having sex, and this is about love and the awkwardness of all of it, and it's beautiful, but it's gonna be awkward.
Yeah, Cuarón, like the third Harry Potter movie was basically that.
True. That's Sirius Black, so dreamy.
All right, so no matter what game you're playing, talk about lines and veils, which of course is that part of the social contract that you're talking about in session zero, where everyone basically says, you know, what is the limit that what are the limits of my comfort in terms of this game with this group? And what do we do? What is the mechanism by which we sort of like bring down the curtain when someone in the moment is no longer comfortable talking about something or would like to just move on?
Right. So your lines are things that you will not introduce into the game under any circumstances. You won't allude to them. They don't exist. Veils are exactly that point where you draw the curtain and say, we all know what happened, but we're not talking about it at the table. And I think that's a lot of groups just by default put any type of sexual activity under that veil. And I think the level of romance is often sort of a debate of, you know, is the flirting okay, or do you just say we flirted?
Right. Right. I flirt equivalent to an 18 because right. That's what I rolled. Very well, good sir. You flirt quite excellently.
Exactly. We shall never talk about it.
But yeah, if you want to get into it, right? You want to you and the GM, you and another PC want to actually engage in the actual flirting, and people have ahead of time said that they're comfortable with that and that's what they want this game to be about, then you go for it, because that is within people's lines, within their boundaries, and isn't something that everyone's decided wants should be veiled.
Right. And then I think it's also fair to note that like if you are a third party to that interaction and are uncomfortable, you should also veil, right?
Oh, like, probably you're, like you're, more, even more than the people involved.
Right. Like I think, you know, when you start those, and I've been in those kinds of streams or like, you know, online kind of one shots with people that like I might know, but I don't know well, where like you kind of like, I think we're headed down this path. Hey, you and me, are we cool doing this? And then it's like, yeah, I'm cool. And then everyone else, it's like, are y'all cool with us doing this? And everyone is like, okay, yeah, fine, go for it, right? Or don't.
Yeah, and I think this is sort of mechanically what we mean by continuing to check in, right? You checked in when you suggested the game in the first place. You checked in session zero. You brought up lines and veils. You established them. And even in the moment, you can still check. You should be checking with people. You know, read the room, but also actually ask, everyone fine with this? We're cool with moving on with this? Okay, great. And then you go in.
And I think that's also a useful tool for you as a player if you're kind of going outside your comfort zone, maybe in a game that's introducing romance and you haven't done that before. You're not necessarily like, you know, you're 100% on board, but you're not 100% like confident in it. Like, it can be a good way to diffuse the tension of the scene by just like, hey, let's go back to something we all know and like have a mechanic for, and like, let's check in here. And then like, okay, take a deep breath. And like, now we've all opted in, like I can maybe do this. I know for me, like I was awkward the first time that I had that kind of interaction in a role-playing game. And I think it was because I held James Intricasso's hand.
Plus one handhold.
Right.
I think there are, sometimes people feel like talking about this so much above the table and establishing so much up front can be a restriction and prevent you from role playing or prevent you from really diving into your character and like getting into the romance and getting swept up in it at a table. But I think it actually helps facilitate it because it helps everyone be more comfortable. I think one of the important things that you can do in a role-playing game is sort of stretch your boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. You may not always start off being comfortable with romance at a table, but it might be something that you want to explore or a theme that you're interested in playing a game around or whatever. Having very clear boundaries about when you can stop, when you can like tell someone else to stop, when you can move forward knowing that you're not going to offend anyone else because we've already clearly established what everyone is okay with, facilitates the story, facilitates the drama, and lets you know that you are venturing into, you know, safe territory while sort of taking risks in the game itself rather than actually at the table.
Yeah, I suspect when people say it like gets in the way of like the drama or like the moment, that more often than not, the moment is not what's happening in the text, but it's the moment is the surprise of the other people at the table. Mm. And that feels kind of manipulative. Actually, it feels very manipulative. I'm just not willing to say that that's every case. But certainly we've seen that with a major streamer who has now left the community when he did that exact thing to his players, right? Like that's the Adam Coble situation, is he put the surprise of the players ahead of their safety and like did an extremely inappropriate, you know, on camera scene along these lines. But now he's not here anymore because he shouldn't be, because it's harmful, right? And that's what you want to try to avoid.
So in order to do that, start small when you're bringing it up, right? Don't immediately introduce a true love scenario. If you want people to, you know, actually act it out, right? As a background plot element, that's fine.
Yeah, I like using romance as a motivator before you use it as the like source of the action, right? So before we frame it on scene, let's introduce it as the reason I'm behaving this way, right? Like, you know, my wizard loves your bard. There's no way that I would let your bard be captured. I cast Fireball, right? Like, I will do something incredibly stupid because I will not let my true love be captured.
Right. You're in a small wooden room. I don't care.
Right. you're in a wheat mill.
Oh, God. That's basically napalm.
That's basically napalm. Yep. Yeah. Aerosolized wheat is very flammable. Whatever. They're not taking him alive.
I mean, if you look at something like The Princess Bride, which I think most people, one would be like, great movie, really interesting sort of like RPG elements, but also obviously a love story. Like Wesley and Buttercup kiss one time at the end of that entire movie. But the entire time, everyone knows that they're in love because of the way that they interact with each other, the way that they talk to each other, right? Not necessarily the like physical sexual actions that they take. Like, there's nothing in there to make anybody even uncomfortable, but it's so very obvious how much they are in love.
Right.
And the steps that they are willing to go to in order to protect the other.
Yep, exactly.
Which is, you know, the decision making that you're making in an RPG.
And then I think another kind of romantic through line that works really well in RPGs is that, like, the primetime sitcom Will They Won't They, right? The Ross and Rachel, the Pam and Jim. Like, you never have to leave the Will They Won't They unrequited love phase, right? Like, you can constantly phase in and out of doing the thing that makes them love you and then doing the thing that reminds them why they hate you. And you can leave the drama there forever. Or, you know, at the end of the campaign, you pay it off in like the last session or an epilogue or something like that, where you find out, like, is this a comedy? Is it a triumph or is it a tragedy? You know, are they separate forever?
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Like, romance doesn't need to stand on its own as a genre. Like, rom-com is a thing. You can have romance, but then bring in comedy elements. You can have deep, dark, dramatic elements. You can have a swashbuckling game with lots of action adventure and have romance. And that doesn't dilute those kinds of games. It also doesn't make them any less romantic.
Yeah, and also, like, rom-com is the obvious source because that's where the Ross and Rachel came from, and those are my two examples. But, like, the Will They Won't They is, like, a major part of every romantic drama as well, right? And maybe it's not the two core characters. Maybe it's the third-party temptation. But, like, it's always that question of testing the romantic bond, right?
I mean, it's like, every Jane Austen novel.
Exactly.
Which, again, is, like, a prime example of telling and not showing. This is sort of one of the instances where that actually is a good idea. You can talk about the romance and you can talk around the romance and you can see the actions that stem because of the obvious romance without necessarily having bedroom scenes, unless you want a game about bedroom scenes, which is also fine.
We're about to talk about how we do it at our table, and I'm realizing now that we have made Lancer into a Jane Austen novel.
Of course we have. Yeah, why would we not have done that?
And I hate myself a little bit.
A Jane Austen novel starring a ninja, a hot rodder, a pyromaniac,
a noble duelist,
and two robots.
Yeah, exactly.
Two, like, robot people who drive robots. All right. So how do we do romance at our table?
So I think the first time we did this in our group, and correct me if I'm wrong, was at a Thrillicon, which is sort of our, like, game retreat weekend that we do each year. We played Be Gay, Do Crimes. And I believe that was the first time that we explicitly had any romantic angle in our games.
Yeah, I think so. Like, because it was in the actual rule set. Yeah. Now, to give you a bit of background, you know, we have 8 players, but most of us are married and some of us are married to each other.
Yeah, so we have a married couple and we have a dating couple, like, in our group. So half of our group are romantically involved with somebody at the table.
So there are minefields of in having romance in the game, right? Where one, it's like, I'm already married and you're married and now our characters are, like, having a detente, a romantic detente. But also, you might be having a romantic scene with someone whose literal, actual, real-life partner is also there at the table. But Be Gay, Do Crimes worked fine, I think, partly because it's a one-shot. It's a very simple one-page game.
And it's a comedy game.
Right.
Right. Which helps lighten the mood in general. But I think we just randomly rolled for our crushes. I think that's what the rules say to do. And, like, mm-hmm. let it play out, however. Which ended up in some pairings that were, I think, more awkward for some people than not. And we kind of all grinned and bared it. it turned out to be a really fun, like, funny game.
Now I want to play Be Gay, Do Honey Heist.
Okay, yeah, so Honey Heist is Be Gay, Do Crimes, but with bears.
But bears, right. And, you know, we're a group that has been together, I mean, most of us have been playing together for like 9 years. the group came into its final form like 4 years ago. So we already have enough connection with one another that when people were a little uncomfortable, you know, you sort of look around the room and you're like, all right, I'm fine with this. You know, we rolled it randomly. Let's just see where this goes because we're just going to have a good time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happened with Lancer. I don't think any of us read the random table detail enough to recognize that this was an element of Lancer, but it totally fits the like source material of like the mecha anime, right? But there's, you know, in the random tables at character generation, there's romantic angles, right? Like that can be your relationship to other player characters. And so we ended up rolling actually several, and we had to like dial it back because it was just by coincidence turning into like a CW cesspool before we even started.
Right. Like I think it's a D20 roll. So there are 20 different options for the bond that you can have with someone else. Like you roll the bond, so you know what the bond is. And then, you know, you pick someone else at the table or they volunteer and say, I'll have that bond with you. But I think one of them was you have a crush on someone, like someone else, and we rolled it three times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, like we now, that is, I think for two of our characters, we have that bond, which is just played out as like that motivator, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, she does something in response to, or like, you know, the crush, the object of the crush will do something that is like deliberately like off-putting. And then the motivation is, well, I can't help it, but I find it attractive. Or, he'll do something noble and like, you know, forthright. And it's like, my heart melts, you know, and like, that's all it is. It's just kind of the jokes, right? And then we play up the will they, won't they angle of like, are they going to ever confess that they care about each other? Or will they just continue being selfish, you know, jerk offs in their own hyper Lancer fighter pilot minds?
Right. Or does it become like a fun love quadrangle a la Speed Racer, essentially?
It's kind of becoming more of a Maverick and Goose, I think, in that it's very will they, won't they, but we haven't played volleyball yet, so we don't know.
Soon. I mean, we did just start arena combat in pilot suits, so I think right. Volleyball is definitely a thing that could happen.
I think just more generally, like in other games, I think our default like play style is probably more like, I would say, aggressively asexual characters. Like we deliberately avoid trying to define anything or introducing it into the game.
We don't even usually play characters who show any romantic interest in an NPC.
Right.
Romantic, sexual, or anything, right? Pretty much nobody is like, oh, is the person at the bar hot?
Right.
You know, that barely even shows up. It doesn't even really register whatsoever.
Yeah, like occasionally you'll have the like spouse who's back home while you're doing whatever. But even that, I think, is pretty rare. Like most people tend to be married to the job.
Well, and also, you know, family members die.
Right, yeah, no liability. But I will say we are also aggressive about our very bad that's what she said in phrasing jokes out of character anytime anything happens in that regard.
Absolutely. That's really what we're here for.
Exactly. That's what an RPG is. It's just a setup for that's what she said.
But outside the group, I remember I played a Mutants and Masterminds game back in the day that took place in superhero high school, which of course, when you say, hey, I want to run a superhero high school game, that means there's going to be romance and also we'll have superpowers and won't that be dope? So that's exactly what we did. And, you know, my character ended up with an NPC having a crush on him because he was doing the hero thing and like saved her life during some sort of like sentinel attack on the school. And I think it started off a little uncomfortable for me and I didn't voice it because that wasn't something that I had really knowledge about until I got to know the GM better. Cause of course they're playing this person who had a crush on my character. But then, you know, when we sort of like sat down, just had this, like the briefest of conversations about like, where is this going to go? Or like, what are her intentions? And like, what are the things that you're interested in happening in this game? And he was like, oh, I mean, it's whatever you want. Like if you want to drop this entirely, I have no problem doing that. Or it can basically just be like, she has a puppy dog crush on you. That's what I'm going for. And I was like, oh, I'm totally on board with that. Let's go for it. This could be fun.
I also have a superhero romance experience.
I don't know why you'd play superhero games and then not introduce some romance.
That's perhaps the only part of superheroes I identify with now, I guess. But yeah, mine was also superhero high school because it was masks. Mm-hmm. So and similar kind of thing where it was me and James and Tricasso, like our two characters had like a, you know, puppy love kind of bond. And it culminated with us. I think we were like launching into space for our mission and like, you know, nervously in a rock, like strapped to a rocket. Like my character reached out and held his character's hand. Like that was the fireworks moment of the one shot.
Yeah. Masks, I think is pretty good system for this to happen in simply because the genre is so steeped in romance and teen romance. But the system itself also, the Powered by the Apocalypse system really ties characters together with the bonds and moves and actions that they can take.
Well, speaking of romance-themed games, or games that do that well, would be difficult to not mention another Powered by the Apocalypse game, Monster Hearts, now on its second edition, so Monster Hearts 2 by Avery Alder. That is basically your CW drama Powered by the Apocalypse, where you are playing different types of monsters, right? So vampires, loving werewolves, and such.
Yeah, and each of those monsters is an archetype for the kind of personality that you might find in a high school. So even if you don't know the monster, you're not familiar with the monster, you're probably familiar with the archetype or vice versa.
There's also Starcrossed by Alex Roberts, which I think won a Diana Jones Award and probably several Ennies. It's very good. It's kind of sexual tension, the RPG, I guess. It's about two people who have a deeply like intimate bond, but can't act upon it for whatever reason, right? Doesn't necessarily have to be romantic, but you know, could be professional or honor bound or something like that, where it's kind of playing out scenes of how that torments the two of them. So star-crossed lovers, that's the source of the title.
Does everyone die at the end when they didn't need to die?
Not always.
If they were just the tiniest bit patient?
If they didn't plan poison into their escape plot, maybe that would be a better idea.
Wait 10 seconds for them to wake up. Come on. Also, I blame the priest. Anyway. And then there's Romance Trilogy by Emily Kerr Boss.
Yeah, so this is three different games kind of rolled into one. Breaking the Ice is a game about like first dates and like a new relationship. Shooting the Moon is a love triangle. And then Under My Skin is a LARP style game where a circle of friends start falling in love with the wrong people or each other.
Shane, did you say LARP romance?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that a relationship? I know.
I'm just imagining, you know, throwing bean bags and yelling out sex moves.
Yeah, that's right. We left out our World of Darkness, didn't we? With good reason. And then if you want something that is a little more like crunchy, I guess, Blue Rose is the fantasy romance genre game using Green Ronin's age system. So that's the fantasy age and the dragon age, right? Yeah, that's the franchise. But that's their, yes. Like they use that as their, you know, fantasy monster slaying system. It's been adapted back to more of a romance angle for Blue Rose.
And then I'd say that, you know, if your primary interest in playing a game is the romance element, you don't even necessarily need a game system that incorporates it, right? Because so much of that interaction and that experience is going to be based around the sort of intense interpersonal role play between two people at the table, and you don't need rules or numbers or even dice to necessarily facilitate that. You can put them into or on top of any game that you're currently playing, as long as ahead of time you've set up your boundaries, your lines and veils, you've got your X card ready, so that everyone basically has like this sort of safe playground where you can kind of do whatever you want and see where it goes. And sometimes that ends up in the most rewarding storylines.
All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
Is that the sound of ice cracking as I toss it into a glass? No. It's my cold, cold heart finally beginning to melt.
Well, let's move on to the Character Creation Forge and heat it up in a crucible. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at EvilSansCarne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
So this episode of Total Party Thrill is brought to you by Kobold Press and Deep Magic for 5th edition D&D.
Deep Magic is a book of more than 700 new and amazing spells, with spells added for every spellcasting class.
And none of them make anyone fall in love with you. Because those are terrible spells. Even a genie can't do that.
Yeah. There are also dozens of new subclasses and 16 divine domains, ranging from beer to speed and beyond.
There's dark magic for villains, including blood magic, void magic, infernal magic, mythos magic, and more. And twists on familiar magic such as fireball, charm person, and raise dead.
Plus dozens of new familiars and arcane servants to do your bidding or, you know, do your scouting.
So you can find out more at koboldpress.com and tell them DSPN sent you. All right, so this week in the Character Creation Forge, we have the Heartbreaker Shane. What is the Heartbreaker? I, of course, have never had my heart broken.
The Heartbreaker has love like a tidal wave, is an invincible winner, a dream maker, and a love taker who sets souls on fire.
I see someone went to junior prom.
Well, that would be your junior prom. Mine, I think, would be the Mariah Carey version.
All right, what's the build?
So to do this, I wanted to focus on these spells that were going to give us these abilities. So we have things like Dream, Tidal Wave or Tsunami, Invulnerability, Feeble Mind, Fast Friends, Fireball, Hold Person, which leads us to Rogue 2, College of Lore Bard 18.
What a trickster. All right, from two levels of Rogue, we've got Expertise. Deception, of course, because if you are breaking hearts, you're probably lying. Or persuasion, because, you know, you're trying to get people to do things.
Right.
Leveraging their love.
You'll also get sneak attack, because nobody ever sees the Heartbreaker coming, and cunning action, which will let you hide in shadows when you need to make your escape.
Or run away very quickly when you're getting chased down.
Right. I wanted to get fast hands into this build, and I just couldn't pull it off.
All right, from Lore Bard. I mean, you get everything because bards are great. You'll get a Bardic Inspiration die, D12, Jack of All Trades because you're good at everything when you need to be, and Song of Rest, another D12. You know, a lullaby to lure your lover to sleep.
Level 3, you'll take College of Lore. You'll get 3 more skill proficiencies and Cutting Words. Of course, that's one way to break hearts is just tear them down from the outside, as well as 2 more expertise skills.
At level 6, you get Counter Charm, which lets you save your love from the beguiling influence of someone else who's trying to break their heart. Can you believe it?
Right, yeah. This seat's taken, okay?
I mean, it's musical chairs. I'll be moving on soon, but right. Still, for now, right. It's taken.
As you'll also get your first Magical Secrets, which we will take Fireball to set the target's soul on fire, as well as Tidal Wave, which is, you know, what your love is like.
I'm a materialist. I, of course, believe the soul resides within the body, which is why I set people on fire.
Okay.
Literally. You get 2 more expertises. At 14, you get Magical Secrets. What are some good options for that?
I like Soul Cage, you know.
Very literal.
Necromancy spell. But yeah, you know, you trap them, heart and soul. And then I also like Power Word Pain. Not normally a spell that I would ever recommend, but, you know, it just feels like the right thing for a heart. Break. It just hurts, you know?
Yeah. Think of the damage you can do with a single word. And the word doesn't need to be pain, right? It can be never.
It could be 3 words, I love you. Or 4 words, I still love you.
Ooh. Or 2 words, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. And then at level 18, you'll be able to take 9th level spells with your magical secrets. So we will take Tsunami and Invulnerability, because as you may recall, you're an invincible winner. Nothing
got to harden your heart.
Exactly. And then, of course, we'll want to upgrade our Tidal Wave, because Tidal Wave is kind of underwhelming at that point.
All right. What about leveling up?
We're taking it straight through. 2 levels of Rogue, 18 levels of Bard. I know we're running out of time here, but Heartbreaker is a word that has lots of song titles. So I went through and I went ahead and ranked them. You should tell me where I'm wrong. You can.
Okay. Oh, well.
Okay. Heartbreaker's ranked. Number one, Led Zeppelin. Number two, Dionne Warwick. Number three, Mariah Carey featuring Jay-Z. Number four, Pat Benatar, the source of this one. Number five, Dirty Honey. Number six, Tom Petty and Thee. Number seven, Cash Page. Number eight, Mastercraft featuring John Legend. Number nine, Alabama Shakes. Number 10, Justin Bieber's Heartbreaker. Way down at the bottom, number 999, Getting Hit by a Bus. And last but certainly least, the Bee Gees.
I would like to see Elton John somewhere on this list and probably Ani DiFranco.
Yeah, but they're, you know, they're somewhere after the top 10. Okay, they might be ahead of Justin Bieber and Alabama Shakes. I actually really hate those two songs. There's also Michael Jackson had a song called Heartbreaker in 2001 that was also actually pretty good, but, you know, it's like...
He's been canceled.
Yeah. All right, before we wrap up, let's take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to support the show and help other people find us. If you do that, we will read it on the air. And what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about world-shaking events.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building the Shock Jock.
Well, that's it for episode 267 of Total Party Thrill. I hope you lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.